21 minutes past nine, just to prove that not all greyhounds are black with little white stars on their foreheads. Simone, what was the colour of that one that we just trialled then? It looks, a little kid would say it looks a bit like a Tasmanian tiger.
It sure does. That's a dark brindle. They usually, well, brindles can come in varying shades, but probably the most common one we see is more the tan colour with the black stripes, more like a tiger, but dark brindles, we do see them as well.
Speaking of a tan colour with a black stripe, Neil Brown is still with us. Now, I just did a quick poll during the ad break of favourite holiday destinations around the world. Simone said London, Mick said New York, I said Rome, and Brownie's still sticking to 5 metres behind the 515-metre boxes at Sandown.
Yeah, or the old grandstand, it used to be opposite here, opposite the 500 start, was a favourite spot of mine because it was only a short dash into the club bar, which opened in 1970, around about my time.
Well, it'll eventually be called the Neil Brown Bar because you are an institution here and you date back so far that you can tell the rich history of the track before it was even built. So let's talk about a little bit. We're going to talk about the history, some memories of Greyhound, of Sandown Cups and other big races run out of here. But just tell us a bit about this place that we're at. The racetrack across the road, Sandown Park, was built in the 60s. But I think this, does this predate it?
It does. The club raced over on that venue over there. It was a former horse racing establishment. And the club was very lucky to gain the services of the doyen of greyhound administrators of his time, Jack McKenna, who had been the secretary of Tatura Greyhound Racing Club, and the club brought him here to take over the job at Sandown, and they raced on the track over there as a coursing venue and as a racing venue, and they raced there very successfully Tuesday afternoons, Matt, which would have been interesting to go to the greyhound racing, and there's some wonderful photos of the dogs are in hurdle races, jumping timber slats, and it was tremendous over there. But the lease was up, and the Melbourne Racing Club decided to purchase that property over there. So the very astute Jack McKenna knew this site was here on the opposite side of the railway line.
What was here, just paddocks?
It consisted of three farms, and so Jack had to secretly negotiate the sale of the three properties so that the owners didn't know each other were selling.
Oh, so he was a bit shrewd, wasn't he?
So he's very shrewd because he knew he needed that much space. So greyhound racing was already being conducted at Greysdale Park on the other side of View Road there, where the site of the...
Just to interject, the lids have just sprung open again, and Simone, just to arrest the percentages back towards the blacks, that's a black dog.
Oh, OK. Well, it's run a 5.14 to the first mark there, so a little bit quicker than some of the others we've seen this morning,
too. Greg Miller might even give it a thumbs up. Who knows? Sorry, Brownie.
So they bought the three properties for £110,000, to which Jack persuaded 100 people to put the money up. And, of course, you know, it's a world-class facility now today, and we saw it progress, the track redone in 1995, and this amazing grandstand, and the designer should have a statue out here who come up with the full-length glass frontage of the grandstand, which was built in 87 and has been renovated inside, but the outside never has been touched. And of course the development from the club bar, which I might had when it opened in 1970, had 42 barmen serving the huge crowd.
Well, they knew of your presence in the neighbourhood.
I was only a young fellow in those days.
I reckon you would have got cracking on it pretty early. Hey, just with the role of Sandown, it was always Olympic Park, wasn't it, on a Monday night, and then there was Sandown, and then the Olympic Park closed, and then the Meadows was created. Has Sandown always been... There was a lot of Gallops tracks that played different roles. Some of them were lower-level racing. Was Sandown always a premier racing venue?
Oh, absolutely. Both clubs, you know, were on equal footing and still are. You know, we got tremendous crowds and we had great characters, and there was a lot of atmosphere to be out here on race nights and at Olympic Park.
Was there a vintage era? Like, I was talking to Chris Alford yesterday about the incredible era of 25,000 at the trots at Moonee Valley and the showgrounds. Was there a particular era at Sandown where they just poured through the gates?
Yeah, I think the 70s through to the early 80s. So we had a tremendous period where 5,000-6,000 people would come to each race meeting, and, you know, 10 and 12 to the major nights. So the Australian Cup, the Melbourne Cup, of fond memories of those nights, and 45 straight out bookies, an interstate.
Wow.
you know, it was a lot of atmosphere here and a lot of money changing hands and plenty of characters, you know, league footballers and the odd gangster about the place and everybody enjoyed us quite a cross-section.
Gangsters don't go to gambling sports. That's now, this one's what colour?
Fawn.
Fawn.
Perhaps a red fawn, you could almost
red
say.
Red fawn. I thought it had a bit of an orangey and it's gone into box two. Just quickly, Simone, when they trial them, do they just put them in a random box or is there a specific aim at sometimes if they're trialling solo which box they go into?
It can be. You might have, you know, a young pup, you might just put it near the rails to guide it around. If you've got a couple of greyhounds you're trialling at the one time and you've got a wide runner and one that likes to rail, well, you might put them in that particular order so they're not crashing into each other. Sometimes just straight out the middle. It just varies. Sometimes there's a thought process, sometimes it's as it goes. So I'm not sure why he put it near in box two in that particular instance. Right. Maybe just, you know, first time around and he wants it to head near the rails.
That camera up there, Mick, what's the story there?
So that camera's in box one. That gives the trainers a look at what the dogs are doing in the boxes. Oh. So sometimes they'll lay down the boxes or push back or go up the lids. It gives them a look at what's happening in the boxes.
All right, Brownie, you've done a beautiful history job, and now we're going to talk about some great memories of great greyhounds and great races, and we're going to start with the modern era and work our way back to you. So we'll start with Simone and Mick. My greatest memory is getting Miata rolled twice, and I think one of them was Irma Bale, and was Zylie or Ellen, did she knock her off one year, or she knocked her off in something, but maybe not a Sandown Cup. So Simone, we'll start with you, because you're the youngest, obviously.
Thanks, Nick. Thanks, Matt. Mick might not like you.
If I say Simone, what jumps out at you? What's your greatest Sandown and Sandown Cup memory? What's the first thing that springs to mind?
I'm probably not going to be looked upon favourably here, but the no race.
Tell us about the
Mick,
no race.
Sorry, Mick, but it was one of those. There has been.
Brownie's up the end shaking
his
head.
But it was one of those times I was behind the boxes, and it was just one of those absolute disasters. But when you think of Sandown Cup, I think of that because I remember being behind the boxes on the night doing the broadcast, and I saw what had happened, but we couldn't actually talk about it.
What did happen?
So Don Hazard, he was an older gentleman, and he got a bit unsteady, and he grabbed hold of the lever that can manually open the boxes.
To steady himself.
And all of a sudden, the dogs were racing, and Rob Tester was... Oh, he started calling. I thought,
and he still hasn't recovered. He's still white as a sheet.
And I know I shouldn't say it's a terrible thing to have a memory of, but I just think it's one of those things at the time, and even maybe now, when was it, 10 years later or a bit longer...
Yeah.
I think but when we go further forward, we look back, it's one of those iconic moments that...
Well, to have a rich history, you need calamity, and that's calamity.
It absolutely is, and...
Relaunch the hit song, Who Let the Dogs Out?
Where were you? Which bar were you at the time, Brownie, when that happened?
I was upstairs, and I went white. couldn't believe it.
Did they rerun it?
Well, that in itself is a you know.
Who won the no race?
It was never rerun. I think we've got the trophy upstairs.
But did the greyhounds jump accordingly? Could you have called it a race, even if it was an accidental start?
Well, Robbie Tester called the race until they were pulled up. He was reading off the tote screen at the time, and it was his first Group 1 call here, so he panicked and thought that he'd missed the start.
The dog boxed in the red, looked around the corner and said, no, it hasn't gone past me. I ran back to it.
So typical Simone, she found a disaster as a highlight. What about you, Mick?
In terms of the Sandown Cup...
Because we've got a couple of... I'll give you a clue. We've got a couple of replays.
Yeah.
We've got an Irma Bale and we've got a Bold Tree.
Yeah, look, Irma Bale beating Miata was it was a great story in itself. Miata was a champion of the day and, to see her get rolled. Thanks, Matty. That was a big moment. But Tornado Tears and Fan of Bale, I think they're two dogs that they're obviously very recent. But Fan of Bale passing $1 million eventually, and the way she won her races was really great to watch. And Tornado Tears just for his brilliance.
Well, you told me Fan of Bale was the best ever, and then a week later there was another one. So. Now let's have a listen to Irma Bale, because Brownie, who's a very hard marker, never rated Miata. Let's have a listen to Irma Bale knocking off Miata.
Racing, and Miata has begun only fairly. Irma Bale flew out of the five, straight over to lead, settling down by four lengths in the Sandown Cup, and she's going to come to the turn, last year's winner with a big break. over Destini Fireball, followed by Proven Impala, then Miata. Madison D back on the rail, and they're followed by, at the head of the rest there, Bellhaven, Reckless Charm, and last is Steve Allen. Irma Bale, last year's champion, leads into the back. Four lengths in front over Destini Fireball, Proven Impala, Miata back fourth, and they're followed by, at the head of the rest, Bellhaven, Madison D. Irma Bale still the leader. Destini Fireball, here's Miata winding up. Irma Bale turned in front. Miata getting up out of the ground. Irma Bale in front. Irma Bale clings on. Bellhaven flew late, but I'd say Irma Bale from Bellhaven, but it's very close.
What a hack, Miata, eh, Brownie? Now, you told me a story yesterday, and it wasn't related to this, but it was something to do with her fast times, and there was a particular fast time recorded because it was a particularly still night. What was that story?
Yeah, Robbie Britton probably clarified that for me. I've often talked about the record, which still stands today, 41-17, in the heats of the of that...
Run by Miata?
Run by Miata. She was a superstar, don't get me wrong.
No, I don't backtrack.
I just remind my Western Australian friends that she didn't win a Sandown Cup amongst her very illustrious career. But, yes, she ran 41-17, and I just questioned the time due to the quality of the field. I was talking to Rob Britton about this after all my theories over the years, and Rob said he had the third dog in that particular heat the night the record was broken. And he said he puts it down to the atmospheric conditions. That particular night was so still and such a fantastic night to race, he wasn't surprised, because his dog, who he thought was just an...
There was no wind medica, resistance.
Absolutely none whatsoever. And so I acknowledge Rob on that score. And, you know, who knows, if we get a night like it is right now, Friday night, we could see Tornado 8 years lower that record.
All right. So we go backwards, and Simone had a great chat with the former trainer of Bold Trees, and there was an interesting other conversation on Saturday morning as well, which I want to touch on. But Bold Trees is the... Is he just that when anyone thinks about Farlap, well, I was just reading out the Farlap memorabilia abacus auction, and I thought when I was reading it, that's why I fumbled it, because I was thinking about something else. What's the most, would be the most cherished greyhound memorabilia attached to which greyhound? Would it be Bold Trees, which would be the one that's so famous that there'd be memorabilia that'd be worth something?
I think so, Matt, because he did something that can't be repeated. To win four in a row, race in five in a row, it just won't be done. And he used to bring people to the track, plus his style of racing. I think he used to just take a breather for 300 and then join in. He was an exceptionally quick greyhound. And I know Norm McCulloch told me, if he trialled the dog over 500 at his home track at Warrnambool, he'd break the track record every time. And you know, he made his name, of course, as a stayer, coming home from, you know, last position.
What was the win that you replayed on Saturday morning, Simone?
I replayed his fourth one.
Yeah.
But when I was speaking to Norm, I said, which was your most memorable? And he said, oh, the second one was pretty good, wasn't it? He came from a long way back. And I've been doing a little bit of research on Bold Trees last week and this week, and every run of his is phenomenal. It's just something that we will never see again. And Norm is really surprised. He said, I can't believe people are still talking about him 30 years on. And I said, well, look at Farlap, 100 years on, and we're still talking about him, because what he has done is just never, ever going to be repeated.
You'd have been a pup when he was going around, wouldn't you? And you would have been pre-pup, Pink.
I think I was still in nappies then. But not quite.
You would have heard a lot about Bold Trees over the years.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And look, every time we load a replay or talk about him on social media, even the younger people who went around when he was racing, you know, it's a very popular replay because of his racing style and the crowds that we hear and the atmosphere that comes through those videos. It's it is pretty special.
Well, I've plucked one of his from the archive here, Brownie. This is 87. Let's have a listen to Bold Trees in 87. You can tell us a bit more about it when we've heard it, and then we'll just keep the memories going of other great memories of Sandown Park. We are out here, just before we do this, at the Sandown Park Greyhound Racing Track. We're in a little blue tent behind the 515-metre starting point. The greyhounds have been trialling all morning. You can hear the whizzing sound of the lure and the gates and the boxes crashing open, so it's a great scene out here. But there was no better scene than 1987 when Bold Trees won his second cup.
Racing Lids go up and they're off and running at high intensity. Flew the boxes. Led on settling down by a length or so. Going around them, Galaxy Spirit. Galaxy Spirit on the outside's going to take the lead. Running into the first turn, Galaxy Spirit by three. High intensity second. They were followed by Natter's Dad. Further back on the field is Red Trout. Over on the inside, Bomber's Kid. They were followed by Nathan's Girl, Eskimo Chavot. And Bold Trees checked at the tail of the field. Going down the back and Galaxy Spirit the leader. High intensity going out after it on the outside. 10 lengths away. Then Nana's Dad, Red Shroud. They were followed by Bold Tree, second and third last. Up the back straight, it's Galaxy Spirit, the leader. High intensity on the outside. Bold Tree's 8 lengths away, flying home. High intensity, Galaxy Spirit, Bold Tree's. Oh, what a run again! Bold Tree's right over the top of them in the home straight.
A great call makes a great race, and that was a great call. I might have my memory played tricks on me. I thought High Intensity got the better of him once or twice, but you're pretty keen that Bold Trees had his measure almost all the time.
Most of the time. I think he probably beat him on one or two occasions. But my favourite was his first win, Matt, and you know why. I'm talking straight through McKinnon. He started at 10-1 that night, and you know, he was a youngster coming through, and I don't know, I just thought he was something to back in the heats, and he was great and didn't even dream that he'd win it four times in a row. So, yeah, he was a superstar.
I don't think it's... The Sandown Cup itself hasn't been around for as long as the Sandown track. How long has the Sandown Cup been around, Brownie?
1963, they first run it. They call it the
had a different name, didn't it?
Yeah, Wallamaloo Cup. But they changed
after
it.
A Sydney suburb. That was a good idea for the eastern suburbs of Melbourne, wasn't it?
So they decided to call it the Sandown Cup back in 57, I think, was the first time it was run as the Sandown Cup, and it's been that way since. But it's been some absolute champion stayers. And, of course, in an era for a lot of years where the staying numbers were equal to sprinters, and there was as many staying races on a card as there was sprint races, and that is of course has changed to the present day. But we had you know, superstar stayers. One of my favourites would have been Liz Reen. She's a Hall of Famer, and she won the cup here on two occasions back in the 70s. She ran a third in a Melbourne Cup as a sprinter at about a sixth or seventh race start, and then went on to an amazing staying career. But she was one of the great winners, I think, of the 70s. And there's the race has started with fantastic greyhounds, Osti's Joker, and you know, Arvo's Junior, who we inducted into the Hall of Fame last year. He won it here in 2003. So there's been a lot of outstanding greyhounds that have won the cup.
How Mick Floyd keeps telling me that Tornado Tears is the best ever, but he didn't see Bold Trees. So how good are they getting better with each generation over time, and how good is Tornado Tears, and how difficult a challenge is it going to be for him to go back to back?
Well, the greyhounds have always tended to run quicker, better preparation. The track preparation has probably improved a great deal over the years, and greyhounds just generally do improve the way they're looked after, and you know, they just generally improve. But you know, some dogs would stand the test of time, I'm sure, you know, from one era to the next, and they just stand out, outstanding champions. I think Fanta Bale probably is equal to any that I've seen. Zoomtop's the greatest greyhound I've ever seen. She raced in the 68 race. I saw a race here at Sandown Park in 1969. And the versatility, she could run over any distance, and so could Fanta Bale. And I've not seen a greyhound so far apart that were able to reach the heights they did on all distances.
We're just about to take a break, but just quickly, Simone, one thing that stands out to me is that they come in all shapes and sizes. Miata, you could have put in your purse. She was that small. And others, there was a giant of the time, too, that she used to race against, who was just like a horse. So they just come in. You don't know what's under the bonnet, do you?
No, you sure don't. You look at Al Gran Senor, who tipped the scales at 40 kilos, and he was a superstar as well. He was inducted into the Hall of Fame a couple of years ago as well. So you can get your pocket rockets, and you can get your bigger dogs that sometimes surprise you and handle the tight tracks well also.
Absolutely. All right, good on you guys. Brownie, thank you, Mr. Historian. That was fantastic. It's 20 to 10. We're going to take a break. We've still got